KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Veg Fest, October 14th and 15th at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland. Portland Veg Fest celebrates plant-based living with special guest speaker, running legend Scott Urich, along with free food samples, health and nutrition speakers, chef demonstrations, fitness stage workouts, restaurants, films, and activities for kids and teens. Again, that's the Portland Veg Fest, Saturday, October 14th and Sunday, October 15th, at the Oregon Convention Center, 777 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
My name is Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is painter Linda Ater. Her show Image Building is on now at Blackfish Gallery through October the 28th. Thanks for coming into KBOO, Linda.
You're welcome.
You've been
Thank you for inviting me.
You've been here before, I understand.
I have. Yeah, in 2011. She interviewed me also for a show.
For a Blackfish show?
For a Blackfish show.
Okay, so this show, these are all acrylic on canvas pieces, mostly, and the sort of thing you're getting at is color. They're all about color. It's very important to you, and they're abstract paintings. Some of the titles, all the titles are very much about color. For example, there's one called Violet Encroaches, another one called Three Greens, another one called Warm on Cool. So there's this painting, Violet Encroaches. It's a sort of pale mauve background with two orange shapes. They kind of look like cherries with green stalks or aubergines, and they're in the air. And then at the bottom, there is a dark violet sort of path or shapes that look like they are encroaching coming up. And that's it. That is the painting. It seems almost cartoon-like, but there is a variety in the paint, in the brush strokes. So tell us what was going on with Violet Encroaches.
My work is about color. It's the subject. Color is my subject. So in this case, I was interested in seeing how I could use violet and oranges and blues to create a painting that where the color would move back and forth on the picture plane. So I have these images that I use. I am also a biologist, and I find the forms, biology forms, or the very interesting to use as vehicles for working with color. So in this case, I have shapes that are from microscope slides, where I looked at slides under the microscope from patients for signs of cancer. So I've used these forms in my work entirely as vehicles for color exploration. So in this case, the oranges are sort of floating out there, and I've had to kind of tether them down. So I've got some greenish blue, almost spoon shaped, what are they? Stalks coming out from the top of the painting that keep the oranges back. Warm colors like orange advance. Blue tends to recede. So if you want to hold something back, you put a, you know, something cool in front of it. And the violet is also something, it's on the bottom, it's a dark violet. There's a lighter violet, a mauve color on the background behind the orange shapes. And it, I didn't entitle it Violet Encroaches initially or even think about that. But in looking back at it, And always wanting my paintings to have a color title, that seemed like a it seemed to fit. So
the shape was drawn from. Was it your job to look at cells?
That's right. I was a clinical laboratory scientist. I worked at Kaiser Permanente, and I looked at cell samples from patients who were in the hospital, and I was looking for signs of cancer. So I found these, the shapes of the cancer cells were, some of them are just wild. They're just, extreme. Some are less extreme and more subtle, but they're very variable. And my artist eyes just really took to them and thought that they were just fantastic shapes.
So this would be a bunch of cells from one tissue.
That's right.
Some of them would be bigger or smaller.
Oh, definitely. Different shapes, different sizes.
Different shapes.
Yeah, the cancers, depending on the type of cancer and so forth. So I thought that taking those out of the laboratory, that shape, and putting it on paint or on canvas, with paint on canvas, you could create an entirely new life, and one of, I hoped, playfulness and intrigue as opposed to dread and disease.
Was it in the workflow? If you were done with looking at a cell and you decided it was cancer, how many people would it go down the chain to before it got to the patient?
One other.
So just the oncologist?
Yeah. And pathologist, so,
pathologist.
Yeah.
They would
We were the primary we would initially find something and then give it to the pathologist.
So the pathologist would take a picture into the room and show it to the person?
No, I mean, I'm not sure how that the pathologist wouldn't do that. I'm not sure what the oncologist or the patient's doctor, how that would work. I don't think that's the case. I think, they just got the word probably on paper and verbally. So, they don't see that. The other thing is that, we were in the lab. We were not near the patient. So there was always that tension with, look at these great, beautifully stained cancer cells. And then you think, oh, my God, this patient is potentially dying from this or at least sick from that. And but we were removed from that aspect of it. So for better or worse, in my case, it was better. I was able to use it in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Would you sketch to transfer the image to your studio? How would you get it there?
Well, after doing this for decades, I have it sort of an image bank in my mind.
Oh, okay.
And then these shapes are, they started out kind of as literal shapes, and then they are abstracted over time. One of the things that really struck me recently was that I was at the Brooklyn Museum. They have a stellar ancient Egyptian collection, and I was looking at their tablets, and their their bands of images, and they started out as pictographs for their writing. It was pictograms. And then they moved on to hieroglyphics so that it was easier for the scribes to write. And then, they moved on to an Egyptian Arabic, which was even more abstract, so that it became easier to read and print and that sort of thing. So that struck me as a way to use these images instead of them just being shapes that were filled with color. I could also use these images as in developing patterns, and then having maybe they'll be a language of themselves for themselves. It's curious. That's what people seem to see when they look at them, mm-hmm. at what I'm doing. So now I'm curious about that myself.
So there are a couple of narrow pieces. One is called Three Greens, so it's a sort of mixture of purple background and then different kind of greens, sort of turquoisey and through to kind of grassy green or light green. And then the other one, warm on cool, it seems like a kind of reversal in or a negative of it. But it's a blue background with mainly orange shapes. Some of the shapes are similar. It's like you've just taken four or five shapes and shuffled them.
Mm-hmm.
Were these two pieces made together?
They weren't. But, well, not one after the other or one before the other. They were... I had these two long, narrow canvases, and I wanted to use those. And so that's what I've done. One, you point out and that one is has the warm orangey colors, and the other as the shapes, and then the other one has green, cooler colors as the shapes. One is on blue, the warm colors. Warm colors advance toward the person who's looking at it. Greens and blues tend to be cooler colors, and they tend to go back. You see them not as advancing, but maybe receding, or at least staying in the same plane. So in this case, you're right. I have reversed it. The green is on a reddish orange, and the orange shapes are on a what's called a Payne's gray blue. So they are similar, but different.
But this, are you at this point? Are you? Is this some kind of exploration of color theory?
Well,
are you testing the theories of which colors pop and which colors?
No. It's all intuitively. Let's see. How do I want to say that? It's. I'm not testing anything. It's not a sort of a theory or a hypothesis that I have, and then say of maybe, well, let's see what happens if I use this orange against this blue. I mean, I already know that that's what happens. You know, I know color theory, but I don't. I like to see what happens when you put different colors together and how they create space on a flat surface. And you do that by using the properties of color. There are three. One is intensity, which is the brightness of the color, and as opposed to, and the dullness, that's, you know, there's brightness and then dullness. Then you have value, which is light or dark. And then you have hue, which is the actual color, orange or green. So what I like to do is take value, which is light and dark, and kind of minimize that, and then accent intensity and hue. So that's my, I guess that's sort of this test or the exploring that I'm working with.
Mm-hmm. Do you do all that with paint and brushes, or would you use a computer?
No computer. I do them directly on the canvas. I don't have, and the colors change over time. So, you know, I don't say, okay, I know this is going to be a violet background with a, you know, two orange balls. I may start it and then not, you know, things aren't working. So everything is done on the canvas.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not able to have a, you know, to create it in a different place, like on paper beforehand, mm-hmm. or on the computer. I just want it to start on the canvas and then be, finished over time. So I don't think there are any of my paintings that started out in one way that remained the same until the end.
Do you mix on a palette, or do you mix actually on the canvas?
No, I do. I mix on a palette. Yeah.
Okay, so you know what you're getting before you touch the canvas.
Oh, sure, absolutely. So I'm not sure that the one that I described earlier about the violet encroaches and that mauve background, I really don't remember if I painted that violet background first, whether it was violet. It may have been an entirely different color. But that's what I move toward.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Linda Ater. Her painting show, Image Building, is on now at Blackfish Gallery through October 28th. In the show, one end of the gallery has 24 black and white charcoal on paper drawings. These are mixed symbols. They look, you know, like letters, or they could be like, you know, another alphabet. Some of them are patterns, like a sort of a fishnet kind of pattern, or repeating lines, brick kind of pattern, seeds thrown together. Why did you do this? And then if you did them for a reason, why are they in the show? You know, why are they not?
Well, that's a good question. And I started out, I have a show every 2 years at Blackfish. So after my last show, I started painting using, in a similar way and vein that I had from the previous show. But partway through this 2 year period, I decided I wanted more complexity in my work. And I thought that if I further simplified images and created an image bank or a lexicon, that I could use those images and repeat and vary them in patterns that that would increase the possibilities for color exploration. So I have these in the wall of my studio. You know, I could access these. This is like my dictionary. Mm-hmm. So but like I said, it's more recent. I've only got two paintings in the show that were painted after I did these images, thinking that maybe this is a route that I could take, and this is what my future paintings might look like.
So these are recent, but they're in the show to show people what?
Well, to show people what? I think that black and white, this is all value-based black and white, of course, and these are black on white. There's no real shades of gray. So they, you know, they really stand out. I think that I wanted them in the show because you could, I thought that the viewer could look at those and find some of those shapes in the paintings as well, and to know that I had created a you know, a lexicon or a dictionary or an image bank to draw from for paintings. These are, the black and white images are further simplified from the other abstractions of the cells. So here we've got a process similar to what the Egyptians did when I saw this exhibit in Brooklyn, where they started out with pictograms, and in this case, it would have been an original cancer cell, which is then, you know, abstracted or simplified, basically, is what, mm-hmm. what I'm trying to say. It's simplified so that it's easier to, in that, for the Egyptians to write, and in my case, the further simplification makes it easier to paint. I don't have to think so much about what shape I'm going to use. I can choose from what I've already got, and then, you know, color is my main subject, so I can concentrate on that.
Mm-hmm. How much emotion do you put into these paintings?
I love color, and color just draws me. It just makes me happy. So I guess that's the emotion that mm-hmm. I would say it's. And I also like making paintings that are playful, and I find kind of an intrigue in using these images in a playful manner as opposed to, you know, what they actually would have represented in the lab.
Mm-hmm. They do have that kind of Kenny Scharf look to
yeah.
them. Do you love color everywhere?
You yes. know,
like in this studio, we have a blue, a royal blue sort of 4 foot line around the bottom of the wall, and then above that is gray acoustic panel. So it's rather,
you know, boring. I noticed that blue as soon as I came in.
Did it make you feel good?
Oh, it's great. I just love color and looking at it, you know, outside, anywhere. It's sort of the first thing that draws my eye.
Well, if you walk through, say, the streets of Brooklyn, are you looking at colors there?
I am, actually. My husband, I always, oh, look at that. Look at how those colors work together. And he'll say, come on, we got to go. Don't stop and look. Let's go.
So accidental coloring as well as deliberate, you know,
the way
architect may have used it versus street furniture.
Absolutely.
Sort of random,
absolutely.
Random patterns.
Yeah.
Why do you think color sends you that way?
I have no idea, other than that it's always been the case. I don't know. I just know that I really love it. And because I have a kind of a scientific brain as well, that exploring how it works just appeals to me. It's just an ongoing exploration that I can, you know, have for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What was your first art as a little girl?
Well, sewing. My mother taught me to sew when I was about 5, using, you know, needle and thread. And she would take me to the fabric store, and we would choose fabrics, and I always chose single colored fabrics and liked putting those together. And then I would always take art classes, and just, you know, I gravitated toward color and paint. Yeah.
And but you became a scientist rather than a professional artist.
Initially, right. My parents dissuaded me from going to art school, thinking that, you know, a science degree would hold me in better stead. Mm-hmm. I would have a job, basically.
Did you have a portfolio ready to go?
For what?
For art school?
No, I didn't. I didn't. So but I always took art classes. And I tell you, in the biology classes that I took, you had dissection, you know, you'd be dissecting and you'd have to draw what the what you saw. And, of course, that was great. I really excelled at that. So I got to do some of that as well. And I love biology, too. So it's not I like putting the two together in a way. Right now, it's just a real satisfying endeavor for me.
Uh-huh. So it sounds like you don't do the lab job anymore.
I don't. I'm retired from that.
So you have more time to paint?
I do. I used to only be able to paint on the weekends, and it took me the full 2 years to get enough work for a show. But now I can do some more experimenting and have more time, you know, to do it.
So at Blackfish, you're guaranteed a show every 2 years if you can produce?
Oh yeah, Blackfish is a cooperative, and we have 30 members, and we own and operate the gallery. It's been around for since 1979. In 2 years, we'll have our 40th anniversary. Some of the original members are still there. Barbara Black is one, and she's part of the Black and Blackfish. And we have 4 other ones who are the original members. We have different committees, and we're all on, that's how we operate it. We have hired a part-time director who takes care of a number of things for us. Every month, we have a new show. We can have a show every 18 to 2 years, 2 or 24 months. I do the 2 year, usually. We install our show on the last Sunday of the month, or before First Thursday, we install our show that Sunday before. And then we have a business meeting, and the artists talk about their work and get a lot of questions from the members. And it's a terrific way to have someone look at your work. They know what you've done in the past. They can you may have not have noticed certain things, and they'll say, oh, I see this, and gosh, maybe these look like words now. Are you actually, attempting to do some kind of the hieroglyphics? Or mm-hmm. And I said, well, I don't know, and maybe that's the case. Maybe we'll see what happens.
So they, at this Sunday meeting, I mean, it's a bit late for critiquing because the work is already hung.
Right.
So they're really just giving moral support, perhaps? And giving you ideas to talk about in your... you have a talk coming up.
Yes.
Saturday, October 21st, 2 p.m. at Blackfish.
Yes.
You and Sue Fries.
Sue Fries. She's the artist who is showing with me. We have our work is very different in style, but we have a similarity in using images from the natural world. Mine come from the microscope. Microscopic world. Hers come from the sighted world. She likes to use plants and trees as a basis, but everything is then distilled in an abstract way.
Mm-hmm.
So we have, I guess, basically we're looking for the two of us, we have organic images that tend to play off well against each other.
What is a sighted world?
Well, I'm thinking it's not the telescopic world or the microscopic world. It's the world that we walk around in, and and she likes to draw trees and plants.
But she draws usually with a single line.
She does.
That goes all over the page,
yes.
And then stops.
She does
and
that.
Where
she'll
things
go.
Overlap, she colors in.
That's right. She goes to a site. To a park or even just on the road somewhere where she has her drawing paper and the one she's going to use for a finished drawing. And she uses a number four pencil, BFK, not a BFK, but a number four pencil, B pencil, soft. And she makes a single contour line and then takes that home and does both paintings and drawings from that, and sculptures as well. So she has an interesting process.
Mm-hmm. So if you think of abstract art as sort of emerging in the early 20th century, it was kind of a reaction to realism and, because of photography, and it was very radical. Why do you think abstraction persists now?
Well, I think, abstraction has existed in all cultures for... You think of the patterns in, Indian, Native American work, and I think it's part of human nature to sort of simplify things and take things out of context and then make things, and it's easier to make things if you have a simplified shape. Why does it persist? I think it's a human... I just think it's what we humans do.
So, but based on these black and white shapes that you came up with, they're pointing the way forward for you to do what? Do you know yet? What's
pattern development?
Okay.
I think that I can use these shapes, both repeat them and vary them over time. In patterns, and because of that, I think that I can explore more possibilities with color interaction, and that's, like I said, my main interest is my passion is color. So this was one way to increase that. I hope it does. I think it will.
I've got an idea for you. I did a story for the business section of the Portland Tribune recently, my day job, about Kin Stitch, and they're two women who print on fabric with a digital, it's basically like an inkjet, but it's with fabric dye. And they're very wide bolts of cloth, and they print anything, photo, whatever you can send them as a JPEG. Maybe you could design some fabric, patterned, but not single colored.
That's an interesting idea. They have their studio in the same building I do, the Ford building.
Oh, you know them?
I know about the work, and I don't know them personally, but that is something that I might want to consider.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Linda Ater. Her show, Image Building, is on our Blackfish Gallery through October 28th. Blackfish is at 420 Northwest 9th Avenue. And Linda will also be giving a talk on Saturday, the 21st of October at 2 p.m. in Blackfish. Thanks very much for coming back to KBOO.
Thank you.
Look at that. Perfect. 29.
Ofrenda a Huitzilopochtli.
KBOO Portland en el 90.7 FM en Portland, en el 104.3 FM en Philomath y en el 91.9 en Hood River. Seguimos con Buscando América. Yo soy Tamara Zapata. Comenzamos.
Ahora que me llaman por...
Comienza ahora el programa.
Así que vamos a retirar el IDEM por un ratito.